just landed in jail. Look out, boys, they come down fast. Baby addiction of the working class. In your hearts or in your home, never have to be alone. Woman doors and wild attack, anything to catch a man.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Stark Raven on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
On Stark Raven, we delve into issues of incarceration and criminalization. We air the first three Mondays of each month from 7 till 8 p.m. here on 102.7 FM, and our podcast is available at prisonjustice.ca.
I'm Tiffany Chong.
And I'm Emily Aspinwall, and we're here today with Marge Lamb and our operator, Louise Croft. In the next hour, we're bringing you a special program on racial profiling. We're going to take a closer look at the intersection of racialization and criminalization.
And we also want to tell you that here at Co-op Radio, we're in the midst of our fall member drive. It's one of two times in the year that we call out to you, the listeners, to support Co-op Radio by joining us and becoming a member.
Yes, indeed. We are a cooperative here at 102.7 FM, meaning that we are run by our members. And our members consist of community members such as yourself.
If you are listening but are not already a member of Co-op Radio, now's the time to call us. Just call 604-684-8494. Memberships range from $25 a year to $102.70 a year. You can also become a monthly sustainer for as little as $10 a month.
And so, lucky for you, to thank you for becoming a member this evening, we have several books that you can choose from that we're going to give out to you if you call in and become a member on tonight's show. So the number to call us here is 604-684-8494.
Tonight's special on racial profiling features an interview with Carol Tater, a co-author of a new book called Racial Profiling in Canada, Challenging the Myth of a Few Bad Apples.
And in the second half hour, Marge Lamb will be speaking with Hari Aluri. Hari will be sharing spoken word, music, and more on his experiences with racial profiling.
We will also hear more about the work of local activists and the initiative StopRacialProfiling.ca and have community announcements at the end of the show.
And we will be reminding you of all the great reasons to support Co-op Radio and shows such as Stark Raven. So stay tuned to Stark Raven for the next hour. In June of this year, four Indigenous girls were questioned, harassed, and threatened by a police officer while they were singing traditional Native songs in a Vancouver park. In 1999, a black dentist driving a BMW was pulled over and beaten by the Burnaby RCMP. Racialized communities in Canada continue to bear the brunt of police surveillance and the scrutiny of the criminal justice system. With us to talk more about racial profiling in Canada and the connections between criminalization and racialization is Carol Tater. Carol's been involved in the anti-racism and equity movement for over 25 years. She's currently a course director at York University in Toronto, where she teaches intercultural anti-racism and equity training skills in the Department of Anthropology. Her most recent book she co-authored with Francis Henry. It's titled Racial Profiling in Canada, Challenging the Myth of a Few Bad Apples. Carol joins us from her home in Toronto. Thanks for speaking with us today, Carol.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm pleased to be here.
How do you define racial profiling? What is it?
Racial profiling is the actions of police officers or immigration officers or other representatives of our systems of social control. And what they do really is to identify, rather than identifying a crime and finding a criminal, they identify a racialized person and then try to find the crime to match. I mean, that's sort of a simplistic response, but I think it reveals sort of some of the meaning underneath this word, that these two words that we now have become so familiar with. And for Francis Henry and I, as we began to write the book, we found hundreds of definitions of racial profiling, and essentially, the meaning was really found in the concept of racism, because that's what racial profiling is. But it's connected to the systems of social control, you know, such as policing and corrections and immigration authorities. All use forms of racism in the context of racial profiling.
So the title of your book is Racial Profiling in Canada, Challenging the Myth of a Few Bad Apples.
Right.
And so how is racial profiling more than the work of a few bad apples in our police forces?
Well, I think that what we found and scholars before us and the everyday stories of people who are racially profiled tells us that it is not just the acts of a few deviant police officers who engage in this kind of behavior. It's not, you know, just the product of very prejudiced, exceptional, isolated officers who by themselves engage in these kind of negative behaviors. It is really woven deeply into policing culture. And whether we're talking about police forces in Toronto or in Winnipeg or in Vancouver or in Saskatoon, which is probably the most interesting example, but it is deeply embedded in the policing culture. It is embedded in all the systems that make police forces work in their everyday practices. It is embedded in the policies, the programs, the practices. It is embedded in the kinds of training that they do to prepare police officers to go out and do their work. All of these aspects of institutional racism and systemic racism are really manifested powerfully in law enforcement and in corrections as well.
So, how does racial profiling manifest itself? Can you give us a couple examples?
Can I just tell you a little bit about the book? I think that will be helpful in terms of our approach, because we did use a somewhat unusual methodology in looking at the racialization of communities across the country. We started with the Toronto Star series, which probably many of your listeners may not know about. But in 2002, in October, exactly 4 years ago, the Toronto Star began an in-depth series on race crime and racial profiling. And the series was based on a two-year probe of race and crime statistics that were gathered from a Toronto Police database that documented arrests and charges And the study revealed what we all know is happening everywhere in Canada. It revealed significant disparities in the way in which blacks and whites were treated in law enforcement practices. It showed a disproportionate number of black motorists, for example, are ticketed for violations that only surface following a traffic stop. Blacks are charged with simple drug possession and are taken to police stations more often than whites, facing the same charge. Once at the station, accused blacks are held overnight for a bail hearing at twice the rate of whites. So these were some of the findings of the study that the Star did. Well, then they began to publish a series of articles over a period of more than 3 years, hundreds of news stories, columns, editorials, ed-op pieces, letters to the editor, and the Star, identified as in their first lead article that systemic racism exists in Toronto, and that created a what we call a discursive crisis. All of a sudden, on the very day that the Star, introduced their series, all the public officials in the next 5 days, every single public official, policing authorities, the chief of police, the president of the police association, the president of the chiefs of police of Canada, the solicitor general, the mayor, the premier, all responded with the same discourse, the categorical denial that racial profiling exists in the Toronto Police Force. And that in itself produced another set of discourses or narratives or stories that the Star encouraged people to tell, and that was the stories of what racial profiling, what it did to their lives, the common and everyday being stopped while driving, being stopped while walking, being stopped while riding a bicycle, being stopped while walking into a mall or into a store, standing with friends on the street and just chatting. And these narratives came into the Star, and the Star published them. So we have these sort of two different sets of narratives that are clashing and really reflect what is, in fact, the nature of racial profiling. That is, there's a deep chasm between two worlds, and that's the world occupied by those of us who have white skin privilege and no real understanding of the social, psychological, and physical act of racial profiling, and the world of the racialized communities in Canada, whose everyday lives are marked by the fear that while walking or biking or doing whatever they do in their everyday activities, they'll be pulled over by the police in question, they'll be harassed or brutalized or killed, as it has been so prominently in the Western provinces, and in particularly in, well, Saskatoon and Winnipeg and several other places. So racial profiling, in a sense, creates this state of crisis with profound social and psychological costs. So it's now 4 years later, and the crisis and the debate over racial profiling continues to rage. So one of our goals in writing this book was to try to connect the dots between racism in policing systems and racism as manifested in other systems, the media, and certainly the prison system, and justice, and in lawmaking, and so on. So most of it was confined to racial profiling policing, but that took us to, well, where does this come from? Where do police get these stereotypical notions of blacks and Aboriginal people and Muslims as the other? And we took a very close look at policing culture, which is supported by a huge body of research. And we explored some of the core values and norms of that policing culture, because it's common across, whether we're talking about policing culture in Toronto or in Vancouver or in the UK, because in one of our chapters we did a comparative analysis of racial profiling in three countries, Canada, United States, and the UK. And what we found is in all three places, the culture policing exhibits numerous cultural traits, including, you know, social isolation, solidarity among officers, a siege mentality, militaristic and hierarchical modes and structures of working, codes of secrecy and silence. And what we conclude, and as other scholars do, is that all these traits strongly shape the relationship between the police and the diverse publics they serve, including Aboriginal peoples and people of African Canadian descent and Muslims and people of Middle Eastern descent. So in this analysis, we explored the signifiers of blackness, maleness, and violence, and which converge into this incredibly dangerous misrepresentation of black people and the so-called criminal black man. And in the same way, we find that Aboriginalness is linked to criminality, deviance, and disorder. And Muslimness is, let's say, is linked to fanaticism and terrorism. But what's absent from all these constructions, these sweeping generalizations and categorizations of otherness, is discourses on the deviant white man. There isn't such a thing. You can't find it in the way police, you know, report on what's happened in our cities. You can't find it in the way politicians talk about law and or order issues. Somehow, despite the fact that they're, you know, our prisons are filled with white deviant behavior, criminals who have committed crimes, we never hear about the deviant white man. So what we do in this book, then, is we demonstrate how racial profiling can't simply be explained by the individual actions of a few aberrant behaviors of police officers. And it is embedded in policing culture. It's embedded in the outmoded approaches to the policing of crime. And it's an aggregate of all these forces. And it travels. It doesn't stay in one place. You know, police are linked, I mean, very closely to the media. And they're very linked very closely to the judicial system. And they're linked very closely to systems of correction. So our main point in the book is that racial profiling exists in Canada, and yet it does not keep our citizens safer from violence, because it is an act of violence itself, an action that challenges the ideals and core values of a democratic liberal society. And when you look at the cases like Neil Stonechild and so many of the other men who were taken on Starlight Tours, and, you know, Daryl Knight and many others, one recognizes that that the outcomes of racial profiling are not just you know, the pain of being stopped and humiliated and frustrated and angry, but that, you know, it leads to death of innocent people. And so I think one of the important and we write about all the public commissions and inquiries that have taken place in Ontario and across the country, and you know, we specifically identified one of the most recent inquiries, which is the public inquiry that was held in Saskatchewan, looking at the miscarriage, which is a mild word for what happened with the Saskatoon Police Service with Neil Stonechild, who was not the first nor the last Aboriginal man, I'm afraid, to freeze to death in apparently on circumstances that were at least somewhat uncertain, according to the police. But we know, I think, all of us who do this work and all of those who experience these kind of horrendous crimes, really. The police are incredibly deviant, and But I think that the Wright Inquiry brought out a lot of important issues and the deficiencies, you know, in the investigation that went way beyond incompetence and neglect. I mean, Wright says that concludes that the Saskatoon Police Force had conducted an investigation in a fashion that totally obfuscated the matter, the role of the officers in the force. He found that Stonechild had been in the custody of police on the night where he was last alive. He said that did happen just as a witness reported, and that his frozen body bore injuries and marks that were likely caused by handcuffs. He found that the principal investigator in the case carried out a superficial and totally inadequate investigation of the death and dismissed important information. I mean, there were cover-ups by everybody, by the chief, the deputy chief of police, who ignored or rejected reports that cast serious doubts on the conduct of the Stonechild investigation and so on. So that we, I guess, you know, on one hand, I'm sort of pessimistic about all, you know, we've had so many public inquiries. You know, we just finished in Ontario the Dudley George Inquiry. We had, 10 years ago, we had the Ontario the Commission on Systemic Racism in the Criminal Justice System. We've had the Ontario Human Rights Commission report on racial profiling of both Aboriginals and other people of color. So we have had a lot of these inquiries, and we don't see any concrete substantive changes, which makes me on one hand very pessimistic. But I think that we continue to, and this is how it is in all systems of systemic racism, we continue to need to repeat over and over again the evidence that we have that there is this incredible injustice in our society, this fundamental inequality for Aboriginal people and for African Canadians and for Middle Eastern people and so on. So it's the overall context of our work, and I think it's particularly interesting that in today's paper, and I'm sure there might have been some articles in the Vancouver papers and elsewhere in Canada about Harper's remarks in which he suggested that there need to be tougher that the correctional service needs to take due note that he will be recommending that there be different kinds of treatment for hardened criminals and so on. And the ombudsman for the federal prisoners, Howard Sapers, said today, Aboriginal inmates face systemic discrimination, even though the Conservative government doesn't agree. And he, in his annual report, which was just released today, the prison system routinely classifies Aboriginal inmates as higher security risks than non-Aboriginals. Again, a case of racial profiling. Native people also tend to have a harder time winning parole and receiving rehabilitation, and they're more likely to have their conditional release revoked for technical reasons. And all examples of racial profiling. And he writes, however, the disparities between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal offenders are not well known and should be addressed on an urgent basis. So, I mean, how is it that they're not well known? And I think that takes us to another systemic form of racism, and that is in the media. The media has really contributed and reinforced the otherness of particular racialized communities in Canada, and they do it over and over again. They do it in their news stories, and they do it in their programming, and they do it in a variety of ways in which they show minorities, racialized minorities, as the other, as deviant, as disorderly as problem people. And therefore, when we see these images, they reinforce the fact that there are, you know, that it's white culture, it's white dominant culture that remains in control of systems of representation. And it's white dominant culture that also remains in control of our policing forces and our correctional systems and so on. So
you're making a really good pitch for us here at Co-op Radio, because we're doing our fundraising drive about the role of the mainstream media.
Yeah.
I think it's encouraging that I've seen a couple new books on racial profiling,
yes,
and there's a couple initiatives, and I feel like people are talking about it more,
yeah.
Which
yeah,
we can see as a positive thing.
Yeah.
I guess,
yeah,
I just wanted to end on what recommendations would you have if you could enact change for short and long-term action to tackle this problem? Because as you mentioned, it is systemic.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's sort of a long-term, but there must,
yeah,
be some short-term demands we can put into place.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, for example, there are a number of things. And I think that these have been identified by other people besides myself. I think, what is the the most significant issues is the lack of accountability within policing forces themselves and within the province and the federal government's approach to issues of criminalization, you know, and racialization. So that the management style of policing agencies across Canada has to change. Police services structured along traditional command and control lines emphasize, you know, rules and regulations, you know, the hierarchical nature, the militaristic nature of the culture itself is problematic. I think that training, I often cringe when I read that, you know, after the Dudley George, during the Dudley George public inquiry, and when it was, when it came out what police had done in terms of this terrible contestation, that there was there were a couple of Ontario provincial police who made very racist comments about the protest, and it was caught on tape, and the two officers who made them were caught, and with these incredibly terrible comments that they made, and the first thing that the police chief said was, well, they will be spoken to, and of course they'll have to take cultural sensitivity training. And I mean, this is always the solution to those isolated bad apples. You know, we'll get them to take a few weeks of training. But what we really need is we need new continual reinforcement of change through recruiting, through constant evaluation of what's being done, to better promotion and that black officers and Aboriginal officers who are in these white mainstream police forces do get promoted, that there's better discipline systems for deviant behavior. I mean, in our book, we found just an incredible number of patterns of deviant behavior that was tolerated within the policing culture. So if we want ethical behavior on the part of our police, the police have to create a climate that fosters such behavior. And, you know, and then there has to be civilian review. We lost it in Ontario when Mike Harris came in, and you know, in with one stroke of a pen, something that we had fought for decades, we lost, and there is a promise by our Liberal government that we will get it back. And we've been, those of us who are advocates, we've been fighting for this since we lost it. So I guess in summary, then, for accountability structures are the key to the delivery of police services. We really need provincial governments to lead the way in defining and auditing effective and accessible complaint mechanisms that will hold the police accountable while respecting, you know, their independence. And I think that Judge Wright comes out very strong on that. We need oversight bodies to focus on those specific complaints of misconduct. We need people to be able to come in and tell their stories of racial profiling in a safe environment where they know they won't, there won't be all kinds of backlashes in terms of their own lives.
Later on in the show, we're going to be talking a little bit about StopRacialProfiling.ca, and they do have a space there, and they are collecting stories, so that's one way that people can share that. We unfortunately are out of time.
Okay.
I really appreciate you coming on and sharing with us about your book, and it's been great talking to you.
It's been nice speaking to you.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
Thanks very much, Carol.
You're welcome.
We have been speaking with Carol Tater, and she's the co-author of the recent book, Racial Profiling in Canada, Challenging the Myth of a Few Bad Apples. It's published through University of Toronto Press, and it's soon to be available in the Vancouver Public Library. And you are listening to Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, and this is a special fundraising special here on Stark Raven. And Stark Raven is here the first 3 Mondays of each month from 7 till 8 p.m. And we do focus on issues of criminalization and look at the issues of incarceration. And as Carol was mentioning in her interview about the importance of having these dialogues and having the space for communities to be able to represent themselves, to have more time to people share stories, to look at these issues from a different perspective, and the importance of that through and through and looking at issues such as systemic racism. So it's really important for people to continue to support Co-op Radio because we work on a bare bones operation here. We're all volunteers. There's a couple of part-time staff, but what we really need is people to support this kind of initiative. And you can do that by calling us at 604-684-8494. And
that's right. If you want to continue to hear interesting perspectives from people like Carol, you should help us out by calling 604-684-8494. And for those of you that do call during tonight's show, you have until 8 p.m., we have some special gifts for you, some giveaways. What are some of the different books that we have for
listeners? In front of me, I have a book, The Heart of the Community, The Best of the Carnegie Newsletter. It's edited by Paul Taylor, and it's a fabulous compilation of some of the best writings from the Carnegie Newsletter that's looking at some of the voices and issues of the downtown East Side. We also have a book by Pat Capone, Upstairs in the Crazy House, The Life of a Psychiatric Survivor, a Vandana Shiva book called Stolen Harvest, Hijacking of the Global Food Supply, and a book called Speaking in Tongues, Pen Canada Writers in Exile. So those are just four of, there's a couple other books we have on gardening and a couple other things you can choose from. If you give us a call, it's a little motivator for you to give us a call at 604-684-8494. And memberships start as low as $25 for fixed income a year and go all the way up. And we encourage people to become sustaining members. That's when a little bit of money comes out of your bank account or your Visa card every month. It can be as little as $10. And that's a great way to continue regular support of Co-op Radio. So we're going to go now to a song, and after the song, we're going to have Marge. She's going to be talking to Hari, and we're going to continue to talk about racial profiling here on our special program on Stark Raven. But we're going to hear a track called Asada's Song. This is a song about Asada Shakur, and it's by Common, and the album is Like Water for Chocolate. You're listening to Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM. You should call us now at 604-684-8494.
In the spirit of God, in the spirit of the ancestors. spirit of the Black Panthers, in the spirit of Asada Shakur, we make this movement towards freedom for all those who have been oppressed and all those in the struggle. Yeah, yeah, check it. There were lights and sirens, gunshots frying. Cover your eyes as I describe a scene so violent. Seemed like a bad dream. She laid in the blood puddle, blood bubbled in her chest. Cold air brushed against open flesh, no room to rest. Pain consumed these breaths. Shot twice with her hands up. Police questioned, but shot before she answered. One Panther lost his life, the other ran for his. Scandalous the police were as they kicked and beat her. Comprehension, she was beyond trying to hold on to life. She thought she lived with no arm, that's what it felt like. Got to the hospital, eyes held tight. They moved the room to room, she could tell by the light. Handcuffed tight to the bed, through her skin they bit. With guns to her head, every word she got hit. Who shot the trooper, they asked her. Put the mace in her eyes, threatened to blast her. Her mind raced till things got still. Opened her eyes, realized she's next to her best friend who got killed. She got chills if they told her that's what she would be next. Hurt mixed with anger, survival was a reflex. They lied and denied visits from a lawyer, but she was building as they tried to destroy her. If it wasn't for this German nurse, they would have served the worst. I read the sister's story, knew that it deserved a verse. I wonder what would happen if that would have been me. All of this just so we could be free, so dig it, y'all. Awakened her, walkie-talkies crackling, not saying where they taking her. Though she kinda knew what made the ride peaceful was the trees and the sky was blue. Arrived to Middlesex prison about 6 in the morning. Uneasy as they pushed her to the second floor in a cell. One cot, no window facing hell. Put in the basement of a prison with all males and the smell of misery, seedless toilets and centipedes. She exercised, paint, and began to read. 2 years in the hole, her soul grew weak. Away from people so long she forgot how to speak. She discovered freedom is an unspoken sound, and a wall is a wall and can be broken down. Found peace in the Panther, she went on trial with one of the brothers. She had a child with the foulness. They would feed her, hoping she'd lose her seed. Held tight, knowing the fight would live through the sea. In need of a doctor, from her stomach she'd bleed. Out of this situation, a girl was received. Separated from her, left to mother the revolution. And lactate to attack hate, cause federal estate was built for black fate. Her emptiness was filled with
beauty. And that is Some Common. That's a saddest song. It's a song about Asada Shakur, and it's off the album Like Water for Chocolate. You are listening to Stark Raven on Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM. And we are in the midst of our special on racial profiling. And Marge is here with Hari, and Hari's going to be sharing some spoken word with us.
Okay, thank you so much, Hari, for being here. My name's Marge Lam. Just want to acknowledge that we're speaking on Coast Salish territory. Hari Aluri, I'm so glad he was able to come in. He's an anti-racism, anti-war activist. He writes and does spoken word. He's really involved with the Student of Color Collective at UVic, with the Coloring Project as well, which is a queer, mostly queer people of color writing project, writing on racism, class, media, sexuality. And he is here to do a piece for us.
Thank you, Marge, and thanks to you all for having me on Struck Raven. I'm just going to go into the piece, so here it is. Between this era of psychothera, penal pretrial detention centers, and Wall Street methods of enslavement, the major change has been from blatants to media ratings. I feel irate and need to participate in creating something different from this instant. I was 10 blocks away from the site of a break-in, conversating with a male South Asian about the racism that we'd been facing. At the time, our faces were facing the pavement, knees scuffed, tight cuffs, and elbows scraping. The cops retracing our steps and stating how we looked like the suspects that they were chasing. Amazing. The getaway was blue, the guy's car was brown, and my feet are the way that I get around. So the predicament we were in is due to dark skin and similar routes we were taking. Got me wondering if Canada will ever be a space I'm safe in. How many descriptions can the authorities find my face in when multiculturalism is what this country is claiming, but I am still barely worth tolerating? It's time to admit to something deeper than discrimination. The police told us no use in complaining, letting us go but still throwing accusations, letting us know we're still guilty by association, threatening us to make us feel even more debasement. Now my bruises are paining, like my anger that's straining for a way to be retaliating against the power they're perpetrating. But while my body is aching, my consciousness is waking, so I'm searching my location, trying to tune my thoughts to the beautiful darkness I was made in. And suddenly my experience is guiding my sensations, allowing me to begin to see the embedded combinations, the connections between police intimidation, racial profiling posing as investigation, and military torture passing for interrogation, between the terrorist legislation used for Biko's assassination, Patriot Act activation, and Canada's abuse of security certification, between customs officers doubting refugee statements, Western disdain for the customs of worldwide natives, and the customary use of violent appropriation for cultural assimilation, between crying children's dying parents, brown sorrow, orange agents, red pain, black death, and white government discrimination. Between the Amazon fire that hasn't stopped blazing, mines that are indigenous replacing, and war as a capitalist tool called arms racing. Between the subjugation that molded the blues, and the relegation that left its birthplace and kindred subterranean. Between racialization and state-making, nuclear family, gendered hierarchy, and heterosexist fear-raking. Between thousands disappearing with no explanation, strange fruit hanging in American states in political prisoner incarceration. Between unceded territory taken for urbanization, rejecting necessary social housing recommendations, and cash being dropped on Olympic gentrification. Between billions dying of starvation, first world accumulation, and taxes paying corporations for failing to even rebuild bombed out water stations. I'm digging for the roots of my oppression, and I find diamond trading, Bay and East India companies, and colonization, but I refuse to accept the limitations. So my mathematics mangles mass media's prepackaged propaganda propagation. Currency exchanging plus privatization plus World Bank inflation equals local farmer excavation equals unequal relations. Unequal relations equals colored migration, but settler states are minus Aboriginal self-determination. Canadian reservations plus South African apartheid plus slavery plantations equals the need for reparations. My favorite sweater equals exploitation. Enjoying bananas can be killing Jamaicans. Backpack tourists equals breaking backs of rurals, and sexual tourism equals predatory violation. Fishing villages almost equal community sustainment, but tsunami plus U.S. aid meant displacement and reorganization into entertainment for five-star resort vacations. Resource deterioration brings up levels of rebel proliferation, equals Arroyo's puppet presidency and defensive formation, equals state of emergency using the army for dissent eradication, but even martial law co cannot be allowed to stop the Mangatao mobilization. Racist surveillance plus groundless arraignment plus unjust detainment plus deportation equals politics of containment equals basic human rights forsaken requires security certificates obliteration. 911 plus WMD equals false justification equals illegal invasions equals too many years of occupation. The war on terror equals terror incarnation. Imperial democracy equals colonial administration. Killing 500,000 civilians does not equal one act of liberation. And I am so tired that in this moment I feel like I'm aging, but my face that was facing the pavement is raising itself at the hatred humanity is facing. Fighting back means disrupting domination. When will we stop being run by the laps we think we're racing? Time lapse, mind lapse, it's a faulty design lapse, so we find and disrepair the foundation. I can't think my way out of the situation, so my emotions are gaining. My voice is changing till I hear 111 generations of resistance surround me engaging, and they are giving us the common realization that the proof is in the people, and if there is a future, it must be our creation.
Whew. Thank you, Hari.
Thank you.
Damn. All right. Well, I'm going to let you guys have some time to absorb that. We're going to go to do a track by Native Guns, and we're going to come back and we're going to sit with Hari and ask him some questions and reflect on the piece that we just heard.
Thank you. Take a good listen to the piece. It's called Treason, and it's it deals very closely with what we're talking about here today.
said the president, he's got his war. Folks don't know just what it's for. No one gives us rhyme or reason. If you have one doubt, they call it treason. Treason. They call it treason. If you have one doubt, they call it treason.
I'm out marching in March to protest the war. The contingent was deep like 100 or more. It was sorta like Sicily when rushed by the Moors, or kinda like Biggie when he kicked in the door. We was all amped, all chants rang from a speaker, rang from a megaphone. That was the scene, and then it happened quick. Pooters in the front, dusty foot mobs that come start tearing shit up, like kicking trash cans down, running they mouths, and the cops just itching to shut this bitch down. Rubber bullets start flying and the crowd get down.
Everybody brown, move to the left and gather round.
But it was too late, tear gas shot in and in. Couple rubber bullets start hitting me and my men in the chin and the shin. And then it was like 10 police and riot gear start bashing their way in.
Damn, here we go again, as another rubber bullet bounced off my skin. Do I stand there and watch, do I blow with the wind, or do I stand up and practice my right to defend?
Whoa.
But our contingent had elders and kids panicking cause of what a couple idiots did. The smoke from the tear gas making us sick. No time to fuck around, we had to think quick, think organized. We had security on hand, red t-shirts with burgundy armbands. Times like this, they were most prepared. The priority was
get us all the fuck out of here.
Over there where the blue Bayon flags were at, ain't worth it to go back and get caught in the trap. There's a time to hang around and a time to leave. It gotta stick to the plan, gotta be strategic. Either way, you act up, you guilty of. You had enough, you guilty of. You give a fuck, you guilty of. Come again.
Treason.
You act up, you guilty of.
Treason.
You had enough, you guilty of.
Treason.
You give a fuck, you guilty of.
Treason.
Case closed.
Okay,
on to the next topic. We were speaking on a panel at some hip hop conference. Funny, we ain't never gone to college. Couple high school dropouts dropping some knowledge. Academics really grilling us good. Curious cause they never ever been to the hood. Then I seen a hand raised from way in the back. White dude like, yes, I got a question to ask. Then he went into his thing about that and this. And 10 minutes later, still ain't even asked his question. And then all you heard was a couple of sounds. Couple cats running around like,
sit the f*** down.
Oh my God. People started getting stirred. Me and Bam was like,
whoosh,
up out of our churn.
Yo, Kiwi, let's go.
But something about it just didn't seem right. Almost like these three dudes were just picking a fight.
And it's like, huh? I done seen this before. Kids on the auditorium floor, rushing the door.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's like the end of Malcolm X.
Except
before the shit popped off, we slid off stage left and then
pew!
Back to the telly. Steady talking loud about what went down, breathing heavy. Eventually brushed it off on the conversations about who's better, Jay and Oz. And just as DJ Patrick tried to throw his 2 cents in,
get the f*** down.
Better rallies that sketched in, kicked in the door, waving the rest warrants. Couple kids got hurt and they blaming us for it. I ain't say sh*t, I just let them cuff me up. And then I smile when they try their best to rough me up. And get this, just as we were thrown in the vans, Fed agent Caucasian from the conference. Aww.
Close 21. Welcome to prison, boys!
And that was Native Guns off of their new album, Barrel Men. Look them up on the net. They've got a spot on MySpace. They're flipping amazing. That was Treason.
And you are listening to Stark Raven on Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM. And this is a special for the Fall Member Drive. And our special is looking at the issue of racial profiling. And we are encouraging people to call in and become members of Co-op Radio. It's really not too difficult. You just have to call us here. We're all very friendly and approachable people. You just call 604-684-8494 and we'll just set you up to become a member. And memberships start as low as $25 a year. And you can also become a sustaining member by giving a little bit each month. And it's just a really great idea to support Co-op Radio, because where else can you hear fabulous music and creative voices and important issues? So again, give us a call, 604-684-8494, and join up with Co-op Radio and support Stark Raven and support the space to talk about these issues and express these ideas.
Okay, so I'm back. My name's Marge Lam with Hari.
Hi.
Hari, I think we were all floored in the studio, and I'm sure some of you guys out there were too. Do you mind sharing one of your first experiences of racial profiling with us?
Yeah, the first time I feel that I experienced racial profiling and also witnessed police brutality, I was in grade 9, and we were hanging out, blowing off like fireworks and stuff at Halloween, a bunch of friends. I think about 4 of us were of South Asian descent, and with 2 indigenous youth, and we were just clowning around, and then we heard sirens and the police pulled us over, and one of my friends, they took all our stuff, put us, made us stand in a line and stuff like that, and then one of my friends made a joke, and one of the police officers grabbed him, lifted him up. He's a pretty big boy, but the police officer lifted him up and put his gun in my friend's mouth and proceeded to threaten him. And yeah, the guy was never the same since. But that's sort of an instance of both racial profiling and as well, police brutality. Now I've had several experiences, many instances of sort of altercations or instances of being pulled over by the police officer by the police since then. Yeah, I think that it's important to remember when we talk about these big issues that we're always talking about specific people who have experienced, you know, brutality, racism, and as a consequence of, like you said, criminalization and racialization. Yeah.
Thank you. I like this. There's this line that you say in your piece where you talk about, but while my body is aching, my consciousness is waking, and so I'm searching my location. I know that in your piece and in your personal experience too, that you often link what's happened to you personally and the people in your life to the global experience of racial profiling. How do you understand that relationship?
I think they're a very close relationship. Like, one of the main reasons that I got involved with anti-racist activism and things and anti-war activism and all forms of community activism is specifically from the experience of having been an immigrant to Canada, having experienced racism, racialization, negative racialization, moments of racial profiling, both by police officers, whether it's just from the police or sometimes in sort of commercial institutions like bars, restaurants, while going shopping. And I just wanted to sort of speak to that. I was looking through the newspaper today, and there's a piece in the, I think it was the Globe and Mail. I usually try to look for more alternative sources of information, but they've got this thing where Britain, the British Education Ministry is asking their universities to spy on, quote, Asian-looking and Muslim students they suspect of supporting terrorist acts and involvement in Islamic extremism. And so while it's important to... it's important to recognize in this moment that we're looking at an instance of racial profiling, and these things happen at universities, along with criminalization at a major level. Activism is also criminalized in the community and elsewhere. We were working on a project called the March 21st Coalition. I think last year or two years ago, centered around March 21st. We used March 21st because it was, you know, it's a moment where people will allow you to speak about racism, and so you take what you can get. But around that same time, we got leaked to us a internal police email to volunteers for a training session, pretty much that was almost literally on how to beat up protesters. They used really negative language, you know, like dress up as, you know, loser, badass, so on. In really insulting words towards people who are, you know, participating in their democratic right to to dissent. But so again, criminalization of dissent, criminalization of youth, of people racialized as minorities, indigenous people, is all part of this larger context, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely is. Thank you. I know that I'll just end with this question, because there's so much that we can talk about, but in the beginning, you talk about Wall Street's methods of enslavement. What do you mean by that?
That's something I recently found out about. If you haven't read Memory of Fire by Eduardo Galeano, go out and get the book. It's the most amazing history written of history in North America. And Wall Street is named because during the time of slavery in the United States, it literally was a wall that was used to keep slaves from escaping. And so we've gone from that Wall Street method of enslavement to the current sort of corporate structured method of enslavement that, again, Wall Street hasn't changed very much since its inception. That's sort of the message behind that one.
Hidden histories. Thank you so much. Okay, well, that's Hari, and we're going to miss him because he's moving to Toronto at the end of this week. But if you liked what you heard, he is writing in the coloring book, which you can pick up on the drive at Magpie Magazine and People's Co-op Bookstore.
It's also in the library.
It's also in the Vancouver Public Library.
Free.
And we're going to leave you with a last track by Native Guns from the same album. What song's that?
And that's We Said. Thanks very much for everyone for having me on. There's probably some other things you have to say.
Yeah, I just have a few more things before we get to that track. But thanks, Marge and Hari, for coming down. And we're just about out of time here on Stark Raven, but I just wanted to let people know about the website stopracialprofiling.ca. There, we were trying to get someone from that organization to come on, but they were in the midst of meetings. So they are working on some research projects, working with affected communities, looking at racial profiling. And if you have experienced racial profiling, they have a spot on their website where you can share your experience, and they're also interested in people looking to get involved and volunteer. So again, you can check out their website, stopracialprofiling.ca. And wanted to make a couple announcements. One, that there's an event next Tuesday, October 24th at Pacific Cinema Tech, organized by Amnesty International, Human Rights for All, No Exceptions. And they're showing two movies. One is The Road to Guantanamo. It's about Guantanamo Bay and the Tipton Three, who were young British men detained at Guantanamo for a couple years. And there's also a film about Highway to Tears, which looks at missing and murdered Aboriginal women in northern BC. So you can check out more on their campaign at noexceptions.ca. Highway of Tears starts at 7 and Road to Guantanamo at 9:15. And again, we're out of time here, and so stay tuned for Think Indian. But again, we're encouraging people to call and support Stark Raven and Co-op Radio by calling us at 604-684-8494 and becoming a member. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can always email us, but stark-raven@coopradio.org. We won't be back till Monday, November 6th, and we'll see you then. But stay tuned now for a Think Indian special, followed by Pajvak and Blues in the Dark here on Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
To resist with all of our creativity. It is a culture of total resistance.
Native Gun, Blue Scholar. Yeah. So here it is, the exhibition of wisdom beyond the ages from the self-proclamated people's champ.
He's a racist.
I heard that. Maybe it's because I'm pro-brown. And when I speak a little too profound, I get thrown down. But the sound of the haters is grand. I stand mic in hand, talking shit up in this white man's land. And that's a brave thing to do with the Patriot Act of brewing. Cause the hierarchy is hardly just gonna keep the movement moving. If the wheels in your brain move too fast, they threaten. If it ain't making the company money or building weapons, then H-bombs is coming to your hood in big digits. So they structuralize your train of thought. College kids, remember our main objective, question every lesson. They should call me at the crib and question the shit I'm pressing on wax. You'll find facts, not faith, the
what I heard.
Cause that, I just assume bullshit is for the birds.
Anytime, any place, many ways you can get it.
What?
Native bud said it. Anytime, any day, any way, you can get it. Blue Scholar said it.
Anytime, any place, many ways, you can get it.
What? Native bud said it. Anytime, any day, any way, you can get it. Blue Scholar said it. The poor seek food, the rich seek an appetite. So when a rabbit's like you looking straight at the light, at the end of the tunnel, you see we've been dead. They give you what's in, we give you what's instead. Heat up the truth and serve it to you in an instant. So hot it left a permanent imprint. Whether we rhyming or we marching in another rally, from Seattle to the Bay down to Southern Cali. Isang mahal sa lahat ng mga kabataan, ngayon ay lumalaban para sa ating bayan. Back home, overseas to where we be, three bullets in the belly, Geo, Bam, and Kiwi. We like practice and theory, put us together to get the message more clearly. More than merely rapping, this is activism, to unite the blind and give them back their vision.
Anytime, any place, many ways, you can get it.
What? What?
Native Bud said it.
Anytime, any day, any way, you can get it.
Blue Scholar said it. Anytime, any place, many ways, you can get it.
What? Native Bud said it. Anytime, any day, any way, you can get it. Blue Scholar said it.
We three indigenous kids live conditions of the second class citizen. Sons of immigrants looking to the barrel of the guns of the militant, forced to take arms after centuries of killing us. Upon foundations of struggle, we can build movements from Echo Park to Beacon Hill. There ain't no turning back, we took the red pill. Unplugged and ready to destroy and rebuild this unrighteous right wing. Inevitable change like the I Ching. Everything is gained by fighting for the right things. When change starts to rule, the rules start to change to combat the danger. Danger for folks like us who look like us, talking about justice and wars of the people protracted. They brought back COINTELPRO. Oh hell no, revolution comes when the bell tolls once. We finish what our mothers and our fathers begun. Even if the coward got the gold and the guns, I spit from my lungs till my lips and my tongue go numb. Blue Scholars and Native Guns. Anytime, any place, many ways, you can get it.
What? Native Bud said it. Anytime, any day, any way, you can get it.
Blue Scholar said it. Anytime, any place, many ways, you can get it.
What? Native Bud said it. Anytime, any day, any way, you can get it.
Blue Scholar said it.